The car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at carvana.com.
Hey, thanks for listening to DIY for Business. It's Russ and Greg with you. Greg, how's it going?
It's going wonderful. Great to see you.
Great to see you too. I feel like I you know, I've been so busy lately and just so
crazy. No kidding. You are just a man of the world. You are everywhere right now.
I know. But it's like super fun. I mean, for those of you that have listened to podcasts, our podcast in the past, you know, I do the whole improv thing, right? I do like, I like this little theater thing, and I've been doing so much more of that. Like I'm performing once a month on a stage, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then each Friday I'm doing like this happy hour thing where I'm also on that same stage with just way less people.
But not only are you performing, you're teaching.
I am. So I'm coaching with somebody else, and I'm actually doing some of the, basically when the main teacher's not there, I'm kind of conducting the class. And then, so I'm doing that. And then I'm just so like, I'm finding so much joy, like doing that stuff.
Yeah.
That, I met this person that hosts, like he has a company that hosts trivia nights. I'm doing that now too.
I think it's so cool.
Anything to get in front of people, you know, it's so much fun to interact and be with people and make jokes. And it's like podcasting, but live.
Well, you know, we were chatting offline and you're telling me about the trivia night, and you get to walk around, talk to different people. You know, you're like me. We love to people watch and observe.
Oh, yeah.
And what you're doing when you're doing all this is you're observing all the different personalities in the room, and you're building characters for improv. Like,
exactly.
You're filing them away. They don't realize they're going to become a character in one of the scenes that you're going to do down the road.
Exactly. I've become like, it's interesting, like how much more of a like people watcher I've become. I don't know if I told you this story, but I was in the city the other day, and there was one of the Waymo cars, the self-driving vehicles. There was a guy standing and he wanted to cross the road to get to, you know, whatever, across the street. This is like Market Street in San Francisco, trying to get across the road. But he wants to let this other car go and he wants to be this nice guy. So he's like telling the Waymo to, you know, he's like waving him on to tell him to go. And of course, there's nobody driving the Waymo. There's nobody in the car.
Yeah.
He's telling it to move forward. The guy's getting all upset that the car's not moving forward.
Yeah.
And then finally he just like throws up his hands and just crosses the street. Like,
well, did you see the viral video that's out there right now? The Waymo standoff.
No.
So there was two Waymos going opposite directions on a street. And one Waymo had to go around something. So he started going around, but it detected the other Waymo coming the other direction. So they both stopped like they're supposed to do, but neither of them knew what to do next. Nobody knew who to proceed, which Waymo to go first. And literally they were just looking at each other for the longest time, and they called it the Waymo standoff.
I love it. It's like our modern day cowboys in Western movies.
So like everybody was going, who's going first? Who's going first? Who's going to win this battle? It was pretty fun to watch that. You know, have you seen the Waymo commercials?
I have not actually.
Oh my gosh. They have the most clever commercials. I encourage our listeners to go out and, you know, do a YouTube search for the Waymo commercials. I think they're really cool.
Top notch. Okay.
Yeah. Good. Whoever's doing their PR, good job.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, they need the commercials because these driving vehicles, they get the bad PR right now.
Yeah,
because people are putting like cones on the cars and making them stop in the middle of something, or you're hearing like all these like weird things about, you know, problems with Waymo, but you don't really hear about the great things. You know, like I will say a great thing about it. I took one. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Like I got to the place. I was safe. Everything was good.
Yeah.
My daughter takes them because in the city, because she's like, well, I don't have to get in the car with some creepy Uber driver. Not that all Uber drivers are creepy, but they're occasionally you'll get one and she knows she's going to be safe. Plus she can throw on, you know, Chapel Run and rock out while she's driving, because you can set up your own music list.
So we might get Waymo as an advertiser, but we just lost Uber. So thanks, Russ.
Yeah, we will. We will. we'll sign them up. But it's the PR that has been the problem. Absolutely. And that, coincidentally enough, we've got somebody that's a pro at this. Zachary Bernard joining us today. Hey, Zach.
Hey, Russ. Hey, Greg. How's it going, guys?
Good. How you doing?
It's going fantastic. Fantastic. And I'd love to, first of all, why don't you tell us a little about your company and what you do?
Yeah, for sure. So I run a company, obviously, as a PR firm, as you mentioned, called We Feature You PR, where we essentially help companies and individuals just build themselves as like thought leaders by having them share their insights on topics that they're expert on, whether it's in like publication, on TV, or even on like podcasts, for example, with the main goal of building them as like experts. So when you have people looking their company name up, looking their name up, anything like that, you have like that credibility. It's like, wow, like this person actually knows what they're talking about. So yeah, that's basically just what we do. I've been doing this for the past like 3 years or so. It's been definitely an interesting journey, to say the least.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice.
And what got you into this? Like what led you to that path? I'm always interested in kind of the origin stories.
That's a really good question. So I would say that I've always had like this entrepreneurial like background, like when I was like 13, 14, etc. Like I'm sure everyone has seen just starting like the classic lemonade stand on like the street and then trying to make a buck or two. Like I've obviously started that route, but it somewhat grew into like learning that like you could do business online with like people, you could sell things online, like digital stuff. And I got this understanding like, wow, like I can literally just talk to people, I can sell things or I can resell things and make money out of it. And that's something like blew my mind, because I used to work in like this retail job for like 2 years or so, like just serving customers, running around, answering like questions. I was like, I could literally just sit at my desk, work, provide a great service, and I could make money out of this. So after somewhat working like this retail job, during that same time, I started diving into just like general like marketing, like automations. Like the first company I started was like a system and like automation agency, where we basically help companies implement like automation, just like save time like overall. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I've noticed is like most people, even if we're saving them time, they care more about the money that they're bringing in, which totally makes sense, which somewhat led to the marketing component. And I realized that we could basically just reach out to like journalists, contributors, publication. And if we had like an interesting story to share, they could actually publish the article. And by doing so, we can leverage those articles, we can have them on our website, on our social media, et cetera, and be able to just build their brand, build our authority and like credibility. So I would say that's somewhat how I got into the space. I wouldn't say it's the most like traditional way, where like I had a previous career in like marketing or anything like that, and then I got into PR, or I wasn't a journalist or anything, but we've definitely built like a lot of connections over the year. And now we've done it for quite a lot of people. Being honest here.
Yeah. Thanks. Congratulations. And you were mentioning kind of some of the ways that you get these articles or interviews through podcasts. Are you also pretty active in social media? And where do you see social media going as far as PR goes? Because I see so many influencers, but I think there's better ways to do PR than just, you know, paying a ton of money for influencers.
No, that's a good question. And I would say that PR and like social media, somewhat like intertwined like together. Like you cannot just do PR and not do social media. Like you have to use like both of those components. So I would say we haven't really focused too much on like influencer marketing per se for like our sake. It's been really more around like building the branding of people. because typically in my experience, like if we look at like influencer marketing, it might be for like a product, like paying, promoting influencer marketing and stuff like that. We don't do much of that, but we definitely focus more on like articles, like podcasts, TVs. But where I'm like somewhat seeing the shift is like podcasts, for example, is becoming like really popular. I mean, you guys have been running this podcast like a little bit, so you kind of know how popular it is. But a lot of people are somewhat starting to take like content from their podcasts, from like maybe like even articles, and have it shared on like their social media. Because that's where like everyone is. A lot of people like to consume like their news, their content, all via social media. There's way less people looking at like a paper copy of a journal, looking at like the news, depending like how old you are. But that's like in my experience there.
Yeah, it's funny, like, you know, going right into how it happens now with the social media makes me think back to my like radio days, right? Like back in the 90s. We had a fax machine that would like just constantly flow in press releases. That thing was always like, you know, you'd hear this beep, beep, like all the time. It was right near like where I was sitting. It was so annoying. But what we would do is we would get so many of these in, and like it was right also near where like, you know, some of the other stuff is that we would like do a little meeting, you know, like basically near the coffee. Actually, this is radio in the 90s. It was probably near like the tequila. But it was in this little space where we'd all like hang out and chat. We would actually just grab press releases, use the backside and take notes on them, like without even really caring like what was coming in. It was really hard to make a presence back then. Now, like, and you know, there was like, we were one of the biggest FM radio signals. And then we were also affiliated with like a news station. So like getting in there would be great, getting your, you know, press release read, but it felt like just a bunch of stuff was going out there into the ether and not getting found. Social media nowadays, sort of the same thing, right? Like there's so much stuff being sent out there and so many messages, and we consume so much. Like, if you had to ask me how many Instagram posts I looked at, you know, this morning, I couldn't tell you. I mean, it's too many, you know. How many YouTube shorts did I watch this morning? I don't know, like a lot, you know? So there's so many things that we're consuming and so much information out there. How does the PR messages, how do we not get lost in the mix, in the shuffle?
I like that. Like one of the things that you mentioned was interesting is with like the press releases, like you mentioned you would get like a lot of them. And that's completely understandable. I mean, if you had a fax number, anyone would just fax like the press release, hopefully you like pick it up. And in my experience, like press releases, I wouldn't exactly call them PR, even though they are, because like the main reason is anyone can do a press release. Like you just push it out. It's just like an announcement. There's usually not anything really interesting about it. In like my experience, we typically want to have like someone, like a company, a person have more like a voice behind it, versus just being like a blank announcement. But I definitely think that you're correct. Like social media, there is a lot of noise. Like people, like there's so much content, and the attention span of people is like really so low. I don't know like the exact number, but I know it's extremely low nowadays. So like the way that you stand out is just really by doing things like differently. And I know like a lot of people, if you're in like a business, for example, a lot of people have always been going for like the past few years that route of appearing as like a guru, like using like a lot of like materialist things and trying to like appeal to like a broader audience. A lot of people nowadays now understand that that's not typically the people you want to work with, that you're just trying to make up a story about themselves, which is probably not true. I think what we're going for, especially with like AI, I think you mentioned like earlier, is that there is a need of much more like authenticity within like people. Like right. Just being able to like hear their journey, like talk about them, as opposed to so much people trying to create like a fake narrative, as far as like those Lamborghinis, for example, as I mentioned, as like gurus. But I think it's really about just being like yourself, like especially like going for like the next like few years. And by standing out, just really doing things differently. And I know that's obviously like a pretty like broad term there, but it doesn't even have to be doing things differently, just doing them in like a unique way, like adding like a twist to it. And like one of the things, like I'm not sure if you're familiar with like newsjacking, for example, when there's like a big like PR push, like a big event going on, like you can jump onto that trend and have like a twist to it to make it look more interesting, and you can capitalize off like all that exposure. So I think it's definitely going to be a pretty interesting few next years, especially with AI. I'm seeing a lot of changes, but no, it's definitely going to be interesting.
Yeah, I think it really will be with AI, but it's, you know, Russ and I have had this conversation on past episodes. So AI is a great for, you know, the majority of the story, but you need that personalization on top of it.
Yes, yes.
Otherwise, you know, people are going to figure out that, oh, that's an AI story, right? That, you know, and it doesn't carry as much weight. So you need that personalization. And that's why what you're saying really makes a lot of sense, right? You're featuring the person, you're humanizing them, you're getting their message out there, their journey out there. You know, in my company, we're trying to do something very similar. I'm just curious with the PR that you're doing, if you're doing PR for a company that has a product, is it still, do you still go after trying to build up the person behind the product or the people behind the product to help promote the actual, whatever people are buying?
Yeah, I would say that's a good question. We don't really work with like a lot of like product oriented companies, but anytime that we do, we obviously have to like understand like what kind of product it is, if it's a service, etc. But we do still try to emphasize focusing on the person behind it, being that face of like the product, the company, etc. Because when you speak with people, they're buying more into like you, like the journey, because there's like much more emotion brought into play, as opposed if it's just like a product, you're just trying to like sell the features or anything like that. Not a lot of people are going to be just interested unless it's like something completely amazing, never seen before, life-changing. But I would say definitely focusing more on like the person is usually like the approach that we take here.
Yeah, I was just talking to a plumbing company, you know, good sized plumbing company, and they've run a ton of different advertisements in the past, whether it's radio, television, print. And their most effective campaign is something they did recently where the owner of the company did I think it was a 30-second radio commercial that basically talked about him growing up in, I wouldn't say poverty, but, you know, not a, you know, they weren't rich growing up, and he had to use an outhouse. And now he has a plumbing company, and, you know, they tied in using an outhouse to where he is now, right? And helping with their plumbing and stuff like that. And that was the most effective campaign they've done. And the company's been around for over 20 years because it personalized the owner of the company. It had nothing to do necessarily with plumbing, but this is who I am. This is where I came from. And I've raised up. And so you're dealing with somebody that understands you. You're dealing with somebody that's not some huge conglomerate sitting in an ivory tower somewhere. And that campaign worked the best for this company.
Yeah. And I love that because just with like Black Friday and everything like happening, like I'm not sure if you guys are like too active on Twitter, but one of the things I've seen is like a lot of like email marketers, for example, one of like the type of like emails they would send is like an email from like the founder or like someone like on their team, making it like a bit more personal. And apparently that has absolutely like crushed like any other emails that they would send, because people really want to buy more into like a story, like a person, as opposed to just being given like a discount, a Black Friday sale or anything like that. And in a way, like I wouldn't say like your example, obviously like the plumber people would like resonate, but perhaps some people might have come from like a similar background and then they want to support someone that has built a company like that. And that's maybe one of the reasons that they decided to go with that person. But yeah, you're definitely right. I think the personal aspect of things is amazing, and it's going to be really big going into like the next few years, especially with AI. Some stuff like there's like video AI, you don't even know what's different or not. So that personal touch will need to be there, and AI can't just make up that personal touch. So yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, we all buy, we're people that are buying from people, you know? So like that personalization stuff, like I work for a company, Beeswax, and it's the most personable company that I know. I used to like, I downloaded a product from them and I got an email from an actual person. And then later that person called me, you know, and later, you know, like it's like, that's how to win these days, I think, is just be who you are. Unfortunately, you know, there's the other side of that, right? Like the sort of the negative side, the dirty side of the internet. No, not that side.
the negative side. Where are you
going, Russ? Sorry, improv. Had to make a joke. Legally, I have to make a joke every episode. You know, the negative side, where you get the bad comments, you get the negative reviews, the negative remarks. So you put up, like, I saw, and actually, I think, what was this from? This was from a plumbing company, actually, where they had a, coincidentally enough, they had a Facebook post that they had promoted that was, that basically every single comment was not about the company, but about the bad choice of photo that they used in this particular ad. Like, it just wasn't, and nothing disgusting, but just, it wasn't, it didn't make sense. Right. And there were probably 150 comments on this ad. Now, one could say, like, okay, well, people are paying attention to the ad, but it also turned into this huge thing where I've enjoyed watching it and seeing it go, because I'm seeing them defend themselves as they go, and all the, you can sort of see like how they shifted as they've gone through. At first it was like, oh yeah, just a funny photo we picked, you know, oh this, you know, and then it turned into, yeah, no, we don't believe that this is, you know, any impact, blah, blah. So it got more legalese as it went on, and just more like positioned as it went on. And clearly they've brought on somebody to assist as they've moved on here. But there is that kind of like that negative side of of the internet. How do you set up your clients to deal with that other side, the negative stuff that might come with PR?
Yeah, I would say, like, the first thing I would say is, like, you have to be ready for it. I mean, if you're expecting to promote yourself, get out there, and then not get like any bad press comments, anything like that, you're probably in for like a long run. And in my experience, once you're getting that type of like hate and stuff like that, it's usually because you're doing pretty well for yourself. I mean, there's obviously levels to it. If that's the only thing you're getting and your business is not growing, then like I'm wrong here. But if you're somewhat like getting hate and stuff like that, and you're probably doing something right. And what I would say for like our clients, like, we obviously like try to avoid like these scenarios where like before they get pressed or anything like that, we'll make sure it's not too controversial. Maybe just a little bit. We can gain some like extra traction from being a bit controversial, sure. Mm-hmm. But we're obviously not aiming to be completely controversial in any way. But once you get like somewhat like bad, I wouldn't say like bad press, but perhaps bad like reaction. That's where you're obviously more in like crisis management in like a way. Where like one of the things you mentioned is like that plumbing company, they started jumping in. And they somewhat shifted their message, like how they addressed that particular situation as you went. One of the things I would recommend first is don't jump into it right away. Plan effectively what you're going to say, so you're not changing your message and just creating like a snowball effect. Figure out like exactly how you want to address that. And in that scenario, I mean, it was a picture. There was probably nothing too offensive about it, if I'm getting that correctly there. So I think just like standing with your point, briefly explaining why you chose this picture, you thought it was funny, that's pretty much it. You don't have to overly explain yourself. If you do, people are just going to find like other little ways to just go after you. And I think it's just about standing your ground, but effectively planning, so you're not like changing your opinion, thoughts, like every single point. And like, I'm not sure if you guys have seen, but one of the things I thought was like really interesting, like Jaguar. I'm not sure if you guys have seen this absolute like blow up on Twitter, where they've changed like their entire messaging. Have you seen that, Greg?
I have, yeah.
You have? Okay. Yeah. That was an interesting one.
I only get targets for electric cars these days, so that's all my...
Yeah, you and maybe that's the direction Jaguar should go, but...
Yeah, like I've looked at it, and that was like one of the things, like I was like, okay, this company built their reputation over years, and in a matter of like... day or two, I think like that one tweet got like 50 million views, and like the entire like replies on it were like all negative.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't anything positive around it. In that situation, I'll be honest with you, I'm not even sure what Jaguar could do. Like the way that they've somewhat approached it, it was like, hey, like we're going full, we're going to continue with the exact messaging. We're going to push for it. We're not going to divert like what we had planned. But in my opinion, that's probably going to hurt them in the long run for a lot of customers. wanted not like electric cars and respected the brand in the first place.
Well, obviously, you know, when they put the campaign together, they didn't think they were going to get the reaction that they got. And from your point of view, like, how do you think through PR campaigns to, you know, minimize the chances that it could be taken the wrong way, the way that you're not intending it to, or, you know, that your clients intend it to happen? Like, because I'm, you know, Jaguar is a large corporation. I'm sure they've had a number of people look at the campaign before it went live. Nobody thought it was going to happen the way it did, I don't think, or at least that person got ignored in the organization. I don't know what happened, but what do you do? Like, what's the process of, you know, you coming up with campaigns and getting it approved and working with the, your clients? Because something like that could happen. You know, we don't want it to happen, but it could.
Like I think they had like a new like marketing director, like brand, someone in charge, like branding. So that's somewhat why they changed like the entire thing. But I think first, what you have to understand is like, who is your target market? Like if you looked at the target market, it was definitely people that like to have like loud cars, like gasoline, not like electric, like powered cars, people that like value the brand for it. And like what we got, like the latest model that I saw that they created looked like something out of like a movie. Like Back to the Future type thing. I was like a little bit confused when I saw that. And you look at like their other cars, which is just like traditional, not too like modern. And I feel like a lot of people buy into that brand because they respect that and they like some of the tradition, like how they built their cars. And they've completely like changed that like script where they went like against like everything that they stood for. And I think that's probably why they really just got like a better reaction. They thought that they would be reaching like perhaps like a new audience, but they didn't think that it would affect the current audience that is probably like their entire market in the first place. So I think first, obviously figuring out who your audience is, making sure that before you actually go to market with the campaign, you run it perhaps by like different type of like demographics that can actually give like their opinion, collect feedback before you just launch that and then like hope for the best. So you have a better idea, like what you're going to market with. Is this actually going to perform? We also want to look at like other campaigns in the past. Like, is there any other like car companies that have created such like a drastic shift in like their approach? How does that perform? What was reaction? And then you can adjust like your approach from there.
You know, what this is making me think of is sometimes, and we've all dealt with them, there's a business owner that has a great idea. That idea as the PR person may not be the best idea, right? Do you, when you come across that, like when you come across some owner that's just like, no, this is what I want to do. And you just think of it like, oh man, this is going to be, well, I just looked up this Jaguar campaign and it says that it's an absolute masterclass on what not to do with your brand. If you run across a company, and now I can't wait to read all this stuff, but when you run across a company or an owner for a company that you're going to work with that has this idea that they want to go this particular route, what do you do? Are you pushing them a different direction, or are you just like, oh shoot, we got to have like the reaction, the other side of this, the cleanup side? Like what are you doing when you're advising clients that come to you with those crazy ideas?
I think like your degree as a business owner, like if you are like B2B professional services, is you have to give like a professional opinion. Whether the client doesn't like your opinion, it's not like what they were looking for as advice. You need to give it. Like if a client brings to me and say like, hey, we want to do this, we want to focus on this component for like an article, for example. Like I'm going to tell them, if it's not in your best interest to do so, like, hey, this is probably not going to perform. This is my personal opinion. This is why I don't think we should actually do this. I'm going to wait for them to consider my opinion. They literally do not take my opinion. Okay. It's typically not a client we would work with in the first place, because we set those expectations. If you work with us, we're going to give you guidance. And there's a reason we give you that guidance, to make sure that we actually get results out of this. So definitely consider like your client's opinion. If they really do not want to hear you, they just want to do it themselves, okay, we can then go into crisis management. But the first thing we will look for is like address them, advise them to be aware, like, hey, this is typically what happens when you go that route. Probably does not make sense doing so. What do you think based on that information? And that's like usually like how we approach those.
Yeah, I like that, you know, you are not, you know, worried about whether you lose a client or not, but you're still going to be authentic with your opinion. And I think there's a lot of companies out there that might sell out and just say, well, I don't want to lose the client, right? And just tell them what they want to hear, and I'll just make the best of it. So I really do appreciate that, you know, you stand behind, you know, giving real advice. And I think your clients will benefit because of that. And, you know, you're the expert when it comes to, like, you're building up the companies as experts in whatever their topic is, whatever their industry is, but you're the expert when it comes to PR, and they should listen to you, and that's why they hired you. So I do appreciate you being honest, and even if it does jeopardize a little bit of friction, you know, with the potential client. Speaking about, like, building up expertise, like, when do you, like, how do you go about working with your clients to figure out what's going to be the message and who you're going to send that message to get the proper audience?
No, that's a really good question. So obviously, like, the first thing we want to figure out is, like, who are they trying to get in front of? It's like, what is, like, their ICP? Where are they based out of? Because obviously there is a lot of, like, medias that we can look to. Some of them might not even reach that demographic in the first place. So for example, for looking to get in front of investors, we're obviously not going to go into, like, a broad publication, broad public, such as, like, US Institute or anything like that. We're going to aim for something like the NASDAQ, the Benzinga, like MarketWatch, financial related. So we get in front of that demographic. So obviously, first thing we do with clients is, like, we strategize, we figure out exactly, like, hey, like, what is your target audience? Where do they potentially, like, read consumer article content and stuff like that? And based on that, we obviously have, like, a network Rolodex of, like, publications that we work with, whether it's a journalist, a contributor, partnership with the publication. And based on that, we can somewhat, like, narrow it down. These are the type of publication, these are the type of TV station, these are the type of podcasts that we would want to go after. And once we have some of that general structure, this is where we figure out, like, what we want to, like, pitch, like, what type of angles, topics, because that's really where, like, that thought leadership expertise comes into play. One of the first things we typically want to do, because you'll see, like, so many companies that we start working with that don't even have, like, a digital presence. They maybe will have a website, and then that's, like, literally it. So the first thing we try to do is some, like, an introduction to the company. It's like who they are, what they've done. So, like, when people search them up, there is, like, a bit more juice to it. But afterwards, we typically try to focus on, like, the founder, the CEO, et cetera. And by, like, expertise, how we somewhat build that is, like, we will have, like, interviews with their client where we're going to talk about, we're going to, like, try to get any topics that is relevant to their expertise, their client, what actually resonates. And the probably easiest way to actually do this is literally just ask them, hey, like, what is the most common questions that you get from your clients, from potential clients? And then based on that, we can come up with topics they can speak to. We talk with them. We get them to do, like, a 1 hour, 2 hour interview, spill all the secret sauce, all their information, et cetera. And then based on that, we have, like, a writing team that works to create these articles. We work with a client to make sure that this obviously resonates with them, to make sure that if we're going to push out something, it's not going to be totally off. But we obviously have to run it by our connection to make sure it's editorial approved. If there's anything that needs to be adjusted, it's obviously, like, up to them. We are not the journalists, but we have built, like, really great relationships with them. So yeah, I would say that's how we start getting those topics and building that infrastructure from the scratch.
You know, the thing that I like when we talk about being an expert in the field, there's and this has come up, you know, on the shows, like, several times, not just with us, with our guests, we'll bring this up, is that, you know, like, that imposter syndrome of, well, I'm not actually an expert. I just do this. You know, I'm the plumber, right? I just do this. Like, I've done it my whole life. That's what I just do. I'm not, like, I can't go speak on it or whatever, or you just don't feel like you're an expert in it. And, you know, I mean, my response to that is always, like, you're doing this every day. You know, I mean, it's like improv. I can't say I'm an expert at improv. But I just do it a lot.
I'd say you're pretty good.
I'm going to probably be better than others, you know, some others. And there's going to be people that come to me for advice and you know, want to know, like, oh, well, what should I do, you know, in this? You know, how do I do this? How do I get started? How, you know, what are improv techniques that I can do? Like, I would be able to answer those questions, but at the same time, I'm not going to say that I'm an expert in improv. So how do you get somebody past that? Does somebody that's listening, maybe that, you know, they're working in some field and they don't think of themselves as an expert. How do you make them feel more like, yeah, you can do this. You're an expert.
No, I love that. Cause I feel like everyone, like whenever you start in business, you start producing content or anything like that, you're always going to have that imposter syndrome, like regardless, because like if you haven't done something first, you're going to have that imposter syndrome, like regardless. So I would say, this is like the most simplest advice, but just do it. Start off, like even if it's something like really small, if it's about pushing that first like piece of content or anything like that, do it once, do it again, repetition, and then tweak, get better. Because as you mentioned, like Russ, you obviously do like improv. Like, I'm pretty sure that first time you went on the stage to improv, it probably wasn't like your best performance. But if you go tomorrow to do improv, it's probably going to be even like better than you're like doing it before. So
it's got to be better than the last one. The last one.
So there's no secret to it, I would say. Like, you really just have to like start putting yourself out there first, and then you just get better with it. But we typically, like when we speak with these clients, we do these interviews, we somewhat get them to understand that, hey, you actually know more than you think. Like, you ask them questions about their expertise, they start spilling like all the secrets, all the sauce, and then you can just tell them like, hey, like this is like really great. Like, I'm not sure if you've noticed, but like half of the population, no, even more, like wouldn't actually know this. There's a reason you're an expert, and automatically just brings their confidence. They're like, okay, like I can actually do this. So sometimes they just need a little push. They need a little like motivation in a way. And apart from that, they start building it. It just becomes a snowball effect from there.
I know you do your own interviews with your clients to kind of gain knowledge and some content. Do you ever set your clients up with interviews with other people? And do you have to like preface the interviewer with a certain questions and topics, or is it free form? How do you approach that from a PR standpoint to set up your clients for success?
I would say that I typically prefer to do these conversations, because usually like when I start speaking with like a potential client, I'm usually going to be the one speaking with them like first. So I get to like understand them on like a deeper level. So when we get to like the interview, I have like a bit more context on like how to structure this. But if I was like obviously have someone else on their team like do the interview, the way I would structure this is first have myself come up with like some general questions that are very specific to the client. And I could even have just like a 5-minute conversation with them like beforehand, just like running them like a few questions, getting them to see if there's anything they can expand onto. And then from there, I would have someone on your team do the questions. But one of the things that we want to do is we're not just going to ask like canned questions and then just use that for like an article. Like, we want them to elaborate, get more information. So we might have like a second conversation after we got the initial point across, to make sure that we're obviously not missing anything.
Would you ever have a magazine interview somebody or a newspaper interview one of your clients, or, you know, would you ever set that up or not?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, I would say we typically really experience that more for obviously like podcasts and then like TV, for example. Those are typically more like interview format. But if we're dealing with like journalists, contributors, et cetera, then yeah, some of them might want like an email introduction, ask a few questions, set up like a quick call. So yeah, that's definitely something we can do.
All right. And so if somebody wanted to, they're listening to this, they're like, oh man, I need to work with Zachary. How do I do this?
I would say that probably my first advice is if you're like a small business owner, like I would actually look at ways to get like free press for yourself. Like, I wouldn't jump to going to work with a PR firm directly if you're like a small business owner. Like, one of the things, like I'm sure you guys might have heard of this, but like Kairo, for example, that's like one of like the platforms where they just journalists ask you a question, you answer. That's like one of the first things I would look at doing. And even like another platform called Featured.com. You can get like some free coverage just by like answering questions. So I would do that first. If you want to get to that next level, get more coverage, bigger publications, stuff like that, you can just head over to wefeature.com or just search up my name. There's not that many people that have Zachary Bernard as a name, but yeah, that's probably the easiest way to reach me.
That's great advice.
That's awesome. I, I love that you're giving people the free approach before, you know, they do the paid approach, you know, like helping people out. I love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
For the people.
But for the companies that are ready to take the next step, and you know, they've done the free and they want to contact you because you have fantastic knowledge and expertise in this, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
I would say LinkedIn is probably going to be the best way. If you just search up my name, it should be one of the first person. I'm on LinkedIn like every single day, so probably the easiest way to find me there.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate that. Thank you, guys.
And thank you for listening, subscribing, and reviewing DIY for Business. The subjects that we cover on this podcast are selected with the goal of helping your business grow. All of the information provided is opinion-based, and you might want to consult a professional to discuss your exact business situation. Greg and I want your company to succeed, and we are happy to take your questions, and we'd love to hear your suggestions for future episodes. If there's a way, some area in your business or something like that where you need some solid business advice, let us know. We might be able to build an entire episode around it and get your questions answered. You can reach out to us by visiting us on our website at DIY4BusinessPodcast.com. The link is in the podcast description. We thank you again for listening and subscribing to DIY for Business, where you are not alone.